A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants a buyer's guide to sandpaper for woodworking, the kind of thing you'd need for building a durable desk. He points out that the sandpaper aisle is basically a wall of cryptic numbers and colors, and most people are just guessing. Then he asks what to look for in a sander, and crucially, whether an N95 mask is actually good enough for sanding wood dust, or if you need real respiratory and eye protection. So we're doing materials, science, power tools, and occupational health in one go.
The sandpaper aisle really is this weirdly intimidating wall. You've got sheets in beige, gold, black, red, green, each one promising something different, and the numbers range from about 24 to 3,000. The thing that most people miss is that sandpaper isn't a commodity. It's a precision cutting tool where each sheet has about 3 separate engineering decisions baked into it.
A cutting tool made of rocks glued to paper. We're basically dragging a gravel driveway across a board and calling it refinement.
That's not even wrong. And the rocks matter enormously. So let's start with what that number on the package actually means. The grit number is a sieve size, literally the number of openings per linear inch in the mesh that the abrasive grains passed through before they got bonded to the backing. A 60 grit particle passed through a screen with 60 holes per linear inch. A 220 grit particle passed through 220 holes per inch. The higher the number, the smaller the particle, the finer the scratch pattern.
The number is basically describing the size of the rock chunk that fell through a particular screen, which means it's not even directly about smoothness, it's about particle diameter.
And here's where it gets tricky. There are at least 3 grading systems in common use. CAMI, which is the American standard, those are the plain numbers you see, like 80, 120, 220. Then there's FIPA, the European system, which puts a P in front, P80, P120. And then, for ultrafine work, you've got micron grading, which measures the actual particle size in thousandths of a millimeter.
The P numbers and the plain numbers don't match up cleanly.
They don't. Below 400 grit, they're close enough that you can treat them as equivalent. CAMI 120 is basically FIPA P120. But above 400, they diverge wildly. CAMI 600 is equivalent to FIPA P1500. If you're mixing brands and you don't know which system you're buying, you can accidentally jump from what you think is 600 grit to something that's actually 1500, and that gap will leave visible scratches from the previous step that the finer paper can't touch.
You're standing in the aisle holding a sheet of 600 from one brand and a sheet of P600 from another, and you think you're buying the same thing, but one of them is more than twice as coarse as the other.
Your finish will tell you. It'll tell you with a dull, scratched surface that won't take a finish evenly, and you'll think you did something wrong with the stain, but it was the abrasive all along. The backing material matters too. Most people don't even look at what the grains are stuck to. Cheap sandpaper uses paper backing. It tears, it folds, it doesn't hold up to power sanding. Cloth backing is more durable and flexible, good for belt sanders and aggressive work. Film backing is waterproof and perfectly consistent in thickness, which matters for ultra-fine finishing. And then there's mesh, abrasive grains bonded to a screen instead of a solid sheet. Mesh is a game changer for dust extraction because the vacuum pulls dust right through the abrasive instead of around it.
The paper itself is a dust clogging barrier that mesh just eliminates.
That's why mesh abrasives like 3M's Cubitron line are taking over pro shops. They last 3 to 5 times longer because they don't load up with dust, and the dust that does get pulled through isn't floating into your lungs. But we'll get to lungs later.
Of course we will. So now that we know what those numbers actually mean, let's talk about how to pick the right grit for the job, and why grabbing 120 grit for everything is a mistake.
The core principle of grit progression is that you're erasing the scratches from the previous grit with the next one. Each grit leaves a scratch pattern of a certain depth. The next grit has to be aggressive enough to remove those scratches entirely, but not so aggressive that it leaves its own deep scratches that the following grit can't handle.
It's not about getting smoother. It's about replacing one set of grooves with a shallower set, over and over.
The rule of thumb that's held up across decades of woodworking is, never jump more than about 50% in grit number. So if you start at 80, your next step is 120, not 180. From 120, you go to 180. From 180 to 220. If you skip from 80 straight to 180, the 180 will polish the peaks of the 80 grit scratches, but it won't remove the valleys. You end up with a surface that looks smooth until you apply finish, and then those deep scratches light up like a topographical map of your mistakes.
I've seen that. You sand for an hour, wipe on the stain, and suddenly the surface looks like a vinyl record of regret.
That's the technical term. Now, for woodworking specifically, the grit ranges break down into rough categories. 40 to 60 grit is for heavy stock removal, shaping, leveling uneven boards, removing old finish. 80 to 100 is initial smoothing, getting rid of saw marks and mill marks. 120 to 150 is pre-finish sanding. This is where the surface starts to feel genuinely smooth to the touch. 180 to 220 is final sanding before finish. And 320 and above is for sanding between coats of finish or polishing.
For a desktop, say, a white oak desk, where do you start?
Let's walk through that exact project, because it's a great running example. You've got a white oak desktop, maybe glue-up panels, maybe some slight unevenness from the clamps. You start at 80 grit with a ceramic alumina abrasive on a random orbital sander. Ceramic is the premium abrasive. The grains fracture as they wear, exposing new sharp edges, which is what self-sharpening actually means. You're not just dulling the paper, you're constantly revealing fresh cutting surfaces. That 80 grit pass flattens the surface and removes glue squeeze out. Then you move to 120 aluminum oxide. Aluminum oxide is the workhorse abrasive for wood. It's durable, it's consistent, and it doesn't cost a fortune. Then 180, then 220. At 220, white oak feels almost polished. You apply your first coat of finish, and when it's dry, you hit it with 320 or 400 to knock down the raised grain before the next coat.
If someone started at 120 instead of 80,
they'd be sanding for twice as long to achieve the same flattening, and they'd generate more heat, which can burnish the wood and make it reject finish unevenly. Starting too fine is actually counterproductive. It wastes time and can ruin the final result.
Coarser is sometimes kinder.
Now let's talk about why your sandpaper clogs instantly on pine. This is one of the most common frustrations in woodworking, and it comes down to something called open coat versus closed coat construction.
This is where the gravel on paper metaphor gets more precise.
Closed coat sandpaper has abrasive grains covering about 90 to 95% of the backing surface. Maximum cutting surface, maximum aggressiveness. Great for hardwoods like oak and maple. But on softwoods like pine or resinous woods like cedar, those tightly packed grains fill up with pitch and dust almost immediately. The paper stops cutting and starts burnishing. You're just polishing the clog.
Like trying to grate cheese with a block that's already coated in wax.
Open coat sandpaper solves this. The grains cover only about 60 to 70% of the backing. Those gaps give the dust somewhere to go instead of packing between the cutting edges. On pine, an open coat sheet can last 5 minutes versus 30 seconds for closed coat.
That's a 10-to-1 difference in usable life. So buying the wrong coating type is basically throwing away 90% of your sandpaper budget.
Then there's stearate coating. This is a zinc stearate lubricant layer applied over the abrasive grains. It looks like a whitish powder on the surface. Stearate prevents clogging by making the dust slippery so it doesn't stick to the abrasive. It's essential for sanding cured paint, varnish, or between coats of finish, because those materials soften with heat and would otherwise gum up the paper instantly.
You wouldn't use it on raw wood.
No, and this is where people get tripped up. Stearate reduces the cut rate on raw wood because it's lubricating the cutting interface. You're sacrificing aggression for anti-clog properties you don't need. So stearated paper on raw oak just takes longer and costs more for no benefit. Save it for between finish coats.
We've got grit number, backing material, open versus closed coat, stearate or not, and we haven't even talked about the actual mineral doing the cutting.
Four main types for woodworking. Aluminum oxide is the default. It's synthetic, it's tough, it self-sharpens to a degree, and it's available in every grit and form factor. If you buy one abrasive type for wood, make it aluminum oxide on cloth backing for power sanding. Silicon carbide is harder and sharper, but more brittle. It's the choice for sanding metal, paint, and for wet sanding between finish coats. You can use it with water or mineral spirits as a lubricant. Silicon carbide on waterproof paper is the standard for finish work.
The premium stuff?
This is what pros use for high-pressure sanding with power tools. The grains are engineered to fracture in a controlled way, constantly exposing fresh cutting edges. It lasts significantly longer than aluminum oxide and cuts faster. It's more expensive per sheet, but the cost per hour of use is often lower because you're changing paper less frequently. For a belt sander or an aggressive random orbital pass, ceramic is worth the premium. And then there's garnet, natural mineral, reddish-brown color, dulls quickly but leaves a very fine, consistent scratch pattern. It's the traditional choice for hand sanding, and it still has a place because the way it dulls actually burnishes the wood slightly, which some finishers prefer.
The sandpaper rainbow at the hardware store isn't just marketing colors. The brown stuff is aluminum oxide, the black is usually silicon carbide, the red is garnet, and the premium ceramic is often that distinctive dark red or blue-gray.
Now you can walk down that aisle and read it. You're not seeing colors anymore. You're seeing mineral types, coating decisions, backing materials, and a grit number that tells you exactly what scratch pattern you're about to create.
Which means the real cost of cheap sandpaper isn't the price per sheet. It's the time you waste, the finishes you ruin, and the wood you have to resand.
The dust you inhale while doing it twice. But before we get to lungs, once you've got your paper sorted, you need something to drive it. Let's talk sanders.
Because hand sanding an entire desk is the woodworking equivalent of mowing a football field with scissors.
It builds character, apparently. The most important sander for furniture work is the random orbital sander, usually called an ROS. It combines two motions. The pad spins in a circle while simultaneously moving in a small elliptical orbit. That dual action means no single abrasive grain ever traces the same path twice, which eliminates the directional scratches you get from a simple orbital or sheet sander.
The random part is the swirl-free finish.
And the key specification on a random orbital sander is the orbit diameter, the size of that little elliptical movement. A 5mm orbit is considered fine finish territory. It removes material more slowly, but leaves a smoother surface. A 6mm orbit is the general purpose sweet spot. Decent material removal still leaves an acceptable finish for most furniture work. And then you've got 8mm and larger orbits for aggressive stock removal, where you're basically using the sander like a tiny belt sander and you'll need to follow up with a finer orbit anyway.
For the desk project, a 6mm orbit ROS is the one-tool solution.
For most people, yes. And pad size matters too. 5-inch pads are standard for furniture work. The paper is cheaper and more widely available, and the smaller pad is easier to control on edges. 6-inch pads cover more area and are common in pro shops, but the paper costs more and you have fewer options at retail stores. The quarter sheet sander, the little rectangular palm sander, is fine for small jobs, but it leaves directional scratch marks because it only vibrates in a single plane. You'll see those marks when the finish goes on.
The quarter sheet sander is the musical equivalent of beige wallpaper. It's there, it does a thing, but nobody's proud of the result.
It has its place for sanding into corners where a round pad can't reach, but for a desktop you want random orbital. Now, belt sanders. These are for rapid stock removal. A belt sander with 40 grit ceramic can remove wood at a terrifying rate. But they're also the easiest tool to ruin a project with. One moment of inattention and you've gouged a divot that requires planing the entire surface down to match.
The belt sander is the tool you buy after you've already ruined one project, and you think the solution is more power.
The actual solution for most people is a random orbital sander with 40 grit ceramic. It'll remove stock nearly as fast as a belt sander with far less risk of disaster. That's one of the misconceptions worth busting. You don't need a belt sander for heavy removal. A good ROS with coarse abrasive is the safer, more versatile choice.
What about the other specs on the box? Variable speed, dust collection, vibration numbers?
Variable speed matters more than most people realize. If you're sanding between coats of finish, you want to dial the speed down. High speed generates heat, and heat softens the finish and clogs your paper. If you're doing aggressive stock removal, crank it up. A sander without variable speed is a one-trick tool.
The dust port?
Absolutely critical, and I mean this literally, a sander without a vacuum attached clogs paper 3 times faster. The dust has nowhere to go except into the abrasive surface and into the air. The port needs to match your shop vacuum or dust extractor. Most consumer sanders come with a small dust bag. Throw it away, or at least ignore it. Hook the sander to a proper vacuum with a HEPA filter.
Because the dust bag is basically a decorative puffball that captures the large chips while aerosolizing the fine stuff directly into your breathing zone.
The fine stuff is what damages your lungs. More on that in a moment. Vibration rating is the spec nobody checks but everyone feels. Cheaper sanders transmit more vibration to your hand, which causes fatigue and numbness over long sessions. The better sanders use counterweights and damping materials to reduce vibration. You can't always find a published vibration number on consumer models, but the weight of the tool is a rough proxy. Heavier sanders with better damping feel smoother in use.
The $60 ROS versus the $200 ROS. What's the actual difference?
Surprisingly, not cut quality. A $60 random orbital sander with good paper will produce a surface just as smooth as a $200 model. The difference is in vibration damping, dust collection efficiency, pad longevity, and how long the tool lasts before the bearings wear out. The premium sander is more pleasant to use for hours at a time, and it'll still be running 5 years from now. The budget sander will make your hand go numb after an hour and might die mid-project.
You're buying comfort and durability, not better results.
The pad itself, the hook and loop interface where the sandpaper attaches. On cheaper sanders, the hooks wear down, the paper flies off, and you're constantly fighting it. Replacement pads are available for quality brands like Bosch, Festool, Makita, and DeWalt. For off-brand sanders, good luck finding a replacement pad 18 months later.
Which brings us to the part of this episode that might actually save someone's lungs.
This is where I get concerned about what I see in home workshops. The standard advice is, wear a dust mask, and most people interpret that as an N95, the same thing they wore during the pandemic. But wood dust is not the same as viral aerosols, and the N95 standard is not designed for this application.
Is an N95 good enough for sanding wood?
For a 5-minute touch-up, yes. For a full day of sanding a desk, absolutely not. Here's the numbers. An N95 mask is certified to filter 95% of airborne particles at the most penetrating particle size of about 0.3 microns. That's what the 95 means. But wood dust, especially fine sanding dust from 220 grit and above, contains particles down to 0.1 microns. Those submicron particles pass right through an N95 filter.
The fit is the other half of the problem.
The fit is arguably the bigger problem. 95 masks rely on a flexible metal nose clip and elastic straps to create a seal. When you're sanding, you're moving, reaching, leaning, turning your head. That seal breaks at the nose bridge and cheeks. You're breathing unfiltered air through the gaps. Studies have shown that even properly fitted N95 masks can have total inward leakage of 10% or more during movement.
That 10% is the finest, most dangerous dust.
Wood dust is classified as a Group 1 carcinogen by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, the IARC, specifically for nasal cancer, particularly from hardwood dust. This isn't a hypothetical long-term risk. It's a well-documented occupational hazard. Cabinet makers and furniture workers have elevated rates of nasal adenocarcinoma, and the latency period can be decades.
What's the correct solution?
A half-face elastomeric respirator with P100 filters. P100 filters capture 99.97% of airborne particles at 0.3 microns, the most penetrating particle size. They're oil-proof, which doesn't matter for wood dust, but matters if you're ever spraying finishes. The elastomeric facepiece is silicone or rubber, and it seals far better than a disposable N95. You can fit test it by covering the cartridges and inhaling. If the mask collapses against your face and holds vacuum, you got a seal.
These are the ones that look like a gas mask from a dystopian film.
They look serious because they are serious. A decent half-face respirator from 3M or Honeywell costs $30 to $50, and the P100 cartridges are replaceable. You'll spend less on this setup over 2 years than you would on disposable N95s for the same period, and you'll actually be protected.
The economics of lung protection favor doing it right.
For people who sand all day, every day, there's the Powered Air Purifying Respirator, a PAP-R. It's a battery-powered fan unit that pulls air through a filter and delivers it to a hood or facepiece. No breathing resistance, no seal issues, and it keeps your face cool. These run from about $300 for entry-level units to over $1,000 for pro models. Overkill for a weekend desk project. But if you're building furniture professionally, a PAP-R is the gold standard.
What about the middle ground? Those valved N95s with the foam seal?
Better than a flat fold 95, but still not adequate for sustained sanding. The valve reduces exhalation resistance and moisture buildup, which is nice, but it doesn't improve the seal. If you're going to wear a mask with valves and foam, you might as well step up to the elastomeric and get actual protection.
You mentioned corneal abrasions.
Wood dust is surprisingly abrasive to the eye surface. A single large particle can scratch your cornea, and even fine dust causes irritation that leads to rubbing, which causes micro-abrasions. Impact-rated safety glasses with the ANSI Z87.1 rating are the minimum. But for overhead sanding or belt sanding, anything that throws dust downward onto your face, a full face shield is better because dust gets behind glasses from above.
If you wear prescription glasses already.
Prescription safety glasses exist and they're worth the investment. They're not cheap, usually $100 to $200, but they're impact rated. They have side shields and you'll actually wear them because you can see through them. Regular prescription glasses are not safety rated and can shatter on impact.
The full protective setup for a weekend desk builder. Half-face elastomeric respirator with P100 filters, ANSI-rated safety glasses, and a random orbital sander hooked to a shop vacuum with a HEPA filter.
That setup costs maybe $100 to $150 beyond the sander itself, and it'll protect your lungs, eyes, and workspace for years. Compare that to the cost of treating a respiratory condition or an eye injury.
We've covered a lot of ground. Let me give you the three things to remember when you walk into that hardware store aisle.
Go for it.
First, buy sandpaper by abrasive type and backing, not just grit. For power sanding wood, you want aluminum oxide on cloth backing. It's the workhorse. For hand sanding between finish coats, silicon carbide on waterproof paper. If you're doing aggressive stack removal, ceramic alumina is worth the premium. Check whether you need open coat for softwoods or stearated for finish work.
Second, grit progression. Never skip more than one grit step. A starter kit that covers most woodworking projects, 80, 120, 180, and 220 grit. Add 320 and 400 for finish work. If you start at 80, your next sheet is 120, not 180. That 50% rule will save your finishes.
Third, for the sander itself, random orbital, 6mm orbit, variable speed, and a dust port that matches your vacuum. The brand matters less than the availability of replacement pads and paper. And the respirator rule is simple. If you're sanding for more than 10 minutes, use a P100 elastomeric respirator. 95 is for quick touch-ups only. Always wear impact-rated eye protection.
One bonus, mesh abrasives are worth the extra cost. They last longer, they don't clog, and they dramatically improve dust extraction. If you're buying new paper anyway, try a pack of mesh discs for your ROS. You'll notice the difference in both cut speed and how much less dust is floating around.
Which brings up an interesting question. With the shift toward water-based finishes and low VOC adhesives, both of which behave differently during sanding than traditional solvent-based products, are we going to see abrasive technology shift toward finer grits and different bonding agents?
I think we're already seeing it. Water-based finishes raise the grain more aggressively, which means more between-coat sanding at higher grits. And the bonding resins that hold abrasive grains to the backing are being reformulated for the heat and moisture conditions of modern finishing. The other trend to watch is mesh abrasives becoming the default. 3M's Cubitron 2 is currently the dominant product in pro shops, but patents expire and competitors are already entering the market. Expect prices to drop significantly over the next few years as mesh becomes standard rather than premium.
The sandpaper aisle is going to look very different in a decade.
Fewer colors, more mesh, and hopefully clearer labeling about which grading system you're buying. A man can dream.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early Renaissance, merchants transporting salt slabs across the African Sahel discovered that when struck, slabs from different mines produced distinct acoustic ringing tones, essentially turning salt blocks into a crude geological xylophone for quality verification, with denser, purer salt producing a higher pitch.
Salt traders were doing non-destructive materials testing by ear, 400 years before we had the word for it.
A mineral marimba in the middle of a trade route. That's clever field engineering.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact and the production. If this episode saved you from inhaling a lungful of oak dust, leave us a review on your podcast app. It helps other woodworkers find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Wear your respirator.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.